Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Thank you for joining us on the program. Stephen Most is a highly acclaimed, award-winning writer, filmmaker. He's written plays, books, documentary screenplays. Stephen has writing credits on 4 Academy Award Best Documentary nominees and 5 Emmy-winning films. His book, River of Renewal, was made into a film that won a Best Documentary Award at the American Film Festival. His latest book, his 4th, is Stories That Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary, a captivating exploration of how documentary filmmakers and other storytellers come to understand their subjects and cast light on the world through their art. It draws on Stephen's decades of experience behind the scenes of television and film documentaries, and writer-filmmaker Stephen Most joining us on This Week in America. Stephen, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Rick. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, and so much to talk about on the program today. And the first thing that comes to mind, nonfiction storytelling. I think we need you now more than ever before with all the fake news out there. This is the right time for documentaries, isn't it?
I think so, yes. Many speak about a golden age of documentaries and the need for true stories that are well-researched and in which all the information is presented in context and seen from a multiplicity of perspectives rather than one very slanted perspective. I mean, this is needed more than ever.
It really is. Stephen Most, our guest on the program, and we're talking about his book, Stories That Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. And I'll talk about the websites for that. Well, Stephen Most is his website. The book's available all across the country. And I'll give you another website you can go and you can actually match up some of the films that that Stephen is talking about in his book. You take a look at storytelling in many forms, and it's interesting because there are many forms that go back, some of them a number of years. Talk about some of the different forms that storytelling has taken over the years.
Well, storytelling is a central aspect of human experience, and I began to think about that as I wrote the book, and some of them are visual, some are oral. A lot of people talk about the first creative expression of human beings from the caves at Lascaux and elsewhere in southern Europe, those amazing cave paintings where they seem to correspond to storytelling and rituals, but there's cave art that goes back to South Africa before that, and who knows how far back shamanism goes. I think shamanism is a basic form of storytelling that has strong comparisons with contemporary media. Then, of course, there's epic poetry, which has some bearing on nonfiction storytelling. One of the principal ideas that we continue to use in nonfiction comes from Homer, comes from the epic. But that, of course, led to the theater and to the craft of history. We're familiar with photojournalism, and among the storytellers that I have known is an oral historian, an Upper Skagit woman, Vi Hilbert. I did an interview with her, learned all about her family's tradition of oral history. But also, if you look at a number of people who might be familiar to you as teachers or writers, you might look at them as storytellers, as people whose central activity is telling stories to inspire and inform others. So I think it's really central to our experience.
That's one of the things, as you read the book, Stories That Make the World, you understand that all of us basically are storytellers. This is sort of what we have in common. It's interesting, I mentioned your background, how playwriting really has had an impact. You were able to bring what you refer to as the sensibility of writing plays, the presentation of plays, into your documentary filmmaking. Talk about that, because that's a unique perspective, because in the play, we really get to see things from different angles through different characters.
Well, that's right. It's a way of looking at the world. It's not from the perspective of one person, which we often have in novels. You have a multiplicity of characters on the stage, and you really can't judge them because you see what happens in action, you see how others respond to them. You wait for the story, for the plot to work out. And sometimes a person who appears to be a negative personality will show characteristics that are quite positive, and vice versa. You really can't make that judgment until the story has unfolded. And I think that's a way of looking at life as well, and at subjects that are interesting. From a kind of distance that reserves judgment until we really understand what's going on.
How do you counteract what is, I'll describe as, a polarized media out there? People sort of live in their own information bubbles. If you're on one side, this is your source. If you're on another side, this is your source. And I sort of think people are looking for affirmation, not necessarily information. How does the documentary fit into all of that in getting people from basically both sides to look at something and to increase their knowledge of the topic?
Well, I think that's behind the appetite for documentary films that you mentioned earlier, Rick. And it's not only documentary films. There seems to be a proliferation of nonfiction storytelling in our culture. I don't know if you've ever gone to one of the story slams of the MOF, but they have people come up and tell stories from their experience, and they're judged by an audience, which is the best story. That authenticity of personal experience is very powerful and much needed in comparison with people who are saying things that are not true to influence people for all sorts of motives. Then you have the phenomenon of podcasts. There's been an explosion of interest in podcasts, much of which has to do with true stories. You look at Serial and S-Town, which were downloaded millions of times. People would binge listen to them. What's really interesting about that from my perspective is you have a plot line in which the investigator looks at every possible angle of a story to figure out who's telling the truth, what the story is here, what's really going on beneath the surface. And that replicates the experience of a documentary filmmaker, which doesn't enter into the film you see, but that kind of investigation, which can take years, is what enables us to tell a story that will be seen, about a true subject, that will be seen by millions of people from all sorts of backgrounds. It takes real investigation and understanding in order to do that, and I think that's much needed by the public right now in comparison with the information we're getting from politics and from the internet.
Yeah, as you're reading and you're thinking about it, you're somewhat discouraged. I will say I'm somewhat discouraged because of the fact that we seem to be polarized. Yet as you think about those areas that we're talking about now, that you were talking about, the story slams, the podcast, the radio series that are out there that really go into what you talk about, you get basically all aspects of the world that they're talking about, leading hopefully to discussion and then greater understanding. So that has to be a positive for you that they're approaching this as you would as a documentary filmmaker.
Well, that's right. It's very positive. And we see all sorts of polarizing and untrue rhetoric in our culture and in our politics, but I think people can be oblivious of reality only so long. That hurricane is going to strike Mar-a-Lago for
exactly.
And how long do you deny climate change? How long do you act as if the tremendous income inequality in our country isn't a problem? And all sorts of social issues that documentary filmmakers and others, of course, long-form journalists are addressing. So when reality bites and people can't ignore it anymore, there will be the work of filmmakers and others that will help people understand what's going on.
Our guest on This Week in America is Stephen Most, author of the book Stories Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. The website videoproject.com/stories, you can stream and download 7 of the films that Stephen writes about in the book, Stories That Make the World. Talk about the challenges now as you try to present a topic. You mentioned climate change, because so many people have their minds made up. What is the challenge as you approach a topic like that, which you've done in the past, enable people to enlarge their own understanding and to see the both sides of the issue. As a documentary filmmaker, what are the challenges you have in presenting that?
Well, climate change is a very difficult subject to represent because any weather phenomenon, any event like a hurricane or a mega fire, a huge flood, that's something in itself. That's weather. And climate change is something that occurs over a very long span of time compared to specific weather events, and its relationship to any one event is unclear. There are documentaries that have shown the impacts of climate change. There's something called drunken forests in the Arctic, because the methane, the permafrost, which contains methane, is not permanent anymore. It's melting, and so the roots of trees are no longer stable. You can see that. There was a great documentary, Chasing Ice, in which the filmmakers actually went to see glaciers and sheets of ice in Greenland and elsewhere cracking in a very dramatic way. So there are things that you can see. But there are also things that you can't see. It's hard to understand that all of the life forms are coordinated in terms of their breeding and feeding cycles. So certain foods have to be available for certain animals at given times. And when that breaks down, when those connections break down, there are all sorts of impacts that we just don't see. So part of the problem is people don't want to know this. We don't want to know how seriously threatened the climate in which human beings have evolved for thousands of years is under the impact of these changes from our industrial civilization. It's really quite dire if you look at it, and nobody really wants to look at it. It's something that we need to face because it's a reality that will affect our lives and the lives of our children and grandchildren.
Your documentaries have really influenced so many people, and as I'm thinking about that and reading the book Stories That Make the World, how has your work influenced and changed you? I'm sure it gives you sort of an ever-evolving perspective of what's going on in the world. It has to touch you as well.
Oh, it definitely does, Rick. I'm interested in a lot of things, and there were many years when someone would propose a film, and it was something that I wanted to know about. I'd say, sure, I'll do it. I got a call from NASA to do a film about an airborne telescope, for example. That was great. That was a whole education. Or I was asked to work with a filmmaker on a film about a controversial architect, and that was fascinating. But more and more, I'm thinking I really have to focus my time on what I think is important, and this is and climate change is very much my focus, and not just climate change as a threat, but it's really helpful for people to see that there are things that can be done about it, not just to mitigate it, but really to address it in consequential ways. So the slogan that I go by is pessimism of the intellect, but optimism of the will. You have to know what's going on. You have to know how badly things can go, but optimism of the will. You find people who have really creative and consequential responses to this. And that's, in many forms, that's the story I want to tell for the rest of my career.
A recent film you did was Nature's Orchestra. This was part of a PBS series. And talk about this as people increasingly leave the cities behind. There's wildlife in the cities. And one thing that you looked into was listening to the natural sound, the recording of the natural sound. And now that critical is a critical indicator of the health of today's habitats. Talk about that, because that was a series, that was a documentary that really got to a lot of people thinking and maybe being a little more appreciative of the world of nature.
Well, the population of the world is increasingly urbanized, and we live within these artificial environments. We have our temperature regulated. We have light and dark regulated. You can be indoors at all times of the year and not know what time it is or
exactly
how cold or hot it is, and have one's attention and one's knowledge focused on screens, little screens and big screens, so that we can live within an entirely human created and regulated environment, a physical environment and an information environment. And it can be a real breakthrough for people just to go outside and listen to voices that are not just human voices, because they're out there. I happen to know a really great and wonderful man, Bernie Krause, who's had a fascinating career, and I had a chance to make this film, Nature's Orchestra, about his work as a soundscape ecologist. He's a musician as well. He, as a young man, performed with the Weavers. He took Pete Seeger's place in the Weavers, and then they had a big reunion in Carnegie Hall. And Bernie would create scores for movies, and he was in studios all the time, having horrible relationships with George Harrison and other people. He introduced the Moog synthesizer to a number of musicians and helped with film scores like Apocalypse Now. So he had quite a career going. I think George Lucas fired him 5 times and increased his salary each time he came back. But one day Bernie went outside. Somebody taught him the word ecology. So he said, well, maybe I'll make an album about ecology. So he went to Muir Woods, which is a redwood forest right near San Francisco. And he started listening through, you know, with good earphones and with a good microphone, recording nature sounds. And I think it blew his mind. He said, you know, he didn't want to be in studios anymore. He wanted to go everywhere on the planet and record nature sounds for the rest of his life. Well, a lot of people record bird sounds and so on, but as a musician, Bernie had another breakthrough. He was hired by the California Academy to go to a waterhole in Kenya to record the wild sounds of 24 hours. And as he did this in a little tent, listening to hyenas and what have you,
exactly,
all of the bird life, he realized that this reminded him of a symphony. And when he looked at what he had recorded on a spectrograph, the different nature sounds fell into frequency niches, just like, you know, notes in a symphony. So all of a sudden, he understood that there's an ecology of nature sounds. And that really was the basis for the science of soundscape ecology. So this is really fascinating to me, but it turned into a good movie because Bernie went with a couple of other nature sound recordists to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And some guys came and filmed this expedition. And I found out about it. The years had passed. Nothing happened with it. They had 30 hours of footage. So that became the basis for Nature's Orchestra.
It is a fascinating and a moving, it's just brilliantly done. That's Nature's Orchestra. Unfortunately, time going by so quickly on the program. Stephen Most, our guest on the program, we're talking about his new book, Stories Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. Stephen is award-winning writer and filmmaker. His website is stephenmost.com. If you go to the website, videoproject.com/stories, you can stream and download 7 of the films that Stephen writes about. It's sort of like what Stephen, you get your own film festival going there. If you go online, you can look at those stories as you're reading them in the book. And the time I have left, at the end of the book, you talk about the role of the internet in digital devices. Tell me a little bit about that, and if you're encouraged, and if this is going to open a whole new window for documentary filmmakers and a whole new audience.
Well, I've been speaking about negative aspects of the information revolution we've had, because anything can be presented out of context, and there it is on the internet, so you think it's a fact.
Yes.
But there are very positive aspects of the internet as well, and they have influenced the craft of documentary filmmaking and the art of making these films in a big way. For example, you can get tremendous amounts of information almost instantaneously that would take a lot of digging to identify people, to communicate with them, to find relevant resources like books and articles. Those can be found very rapidly on the internet. So it's greatly accelerated the research and extended the range of what you can find out about many subjects. Then, too, you can communicate with people all over the world, all over the planet, which is very helpful in identifying people you can learn from and people who can be in your film. In addition to that, we can eliminate the bottleneck of funders to some extent by doing crowdsourcing through sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter, so that one can raise money for a film by going to the audience and building a network. You don't have to depend on some executive making a decision whether to green light you. And then, of course, the distribution, well, you can also access all sorts of archival footage through the internet. That's extremely helpful in editing. And then once you have the film, it can greatly help your distribution. So for documentary storytelling, the internet is a revolutionary development. And I think the way technologies evolve, we're going to see changes in our lifetimes, Rick. I think, for example, because of the need for nonfiction storytelling, I think we're going to see more and more platforms for that on the internet.
I've got about a minute or so left in the program. How do we know when we're watching something, the source of that? So we are not, in fact, watching a program that's paid to try to steer our opinion in a certain direction. Is there any way as a viewer we can tell that we're getting someone like you, someone that is presenting ideas? We take those ideas, we think them through, we discuss them, rather than getting shoved to a particular point of view?
Well, that is a great question, Rick. It's a very important point you're making. I think there's no substitute for critical thinking. When you really are impartial and want to understand a subject, you want the best presentations from every informed, relevant point of view. So, you know, I have somebody in my current film that I disagree with about a lot of things. Well, he has a great platform in my film. And so the viewers can sort out, you know, whether what he's saying makes sense in comparison with what everyone else is saying. There's no way to sort of slant the way he's introduced. He's presented on the same level as everyone else. And take a film like Dark Circle, which was a great film about nuclear technology, plutonium. They had a nuclear physicist who was villainized by a lot of anti-nuclear people. Well, they present him as a person at his home by the fire, and you get to understand where he's coming from. So when you see that, you can get at the values of the filmmaker. If a film is sensational, if it only presents one point of view, if it's very rhetorical, if it sensationalizes the subject, then I think the viewer has good reason to be suspicious.
Very important information, and we can't replace knowledge, and we need that. And you've spent your entire career bringing us knowledge that we can sort through. Our guest on the program, Stephen Most, the book is Stories That Stories Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. Stephen, time went by way too quickly. Thank you so much for being with us on the program today.
Well, thank you, Rick. I very much enjoyed our conversation.
It was great having you with us, and Stephen's website is very simple, stephenmost.com. Of course, you can link onto our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Go directly to Stephen's website and get information on the book. The book, once again, Stories Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.